You're listening to the Beauty Brains Show, where real scientists answer your beauty questions. And now, here's Randy and Perry.
Hello, everybody. I'm Randy Schuler.
And I am Perry Romanowski.
And when we combine our Wonder Twin powers, we become the Beauty Brains.
That's right. Boy, it's been a little while since we've had a show, huh, Randy?
Yeah, we're back, everybody. And on today's show, we're going to be talking about Wen conditioner making your hair fall out. That's W-E-N conditioner, not Wen conditioner. Weird new cosmetic packaging and caffeinated toothpaste.
Ooh, I can't wait. Yeah. Lots of beauty science on this show.
Lots of beauty science. But before we get to all that, I believe we have one of my favorite segments. Are we going to talk about where in the world is Perry Romanowski?
Well, at least where in the world was Perry Romanowski? Yeah, I went to the New York Society of Cosmetic Chemists meeting back in mid-December.
Oh, the Secret Society of Cosmetic Chemists. Awesome.
Yes, and I was installed as the vice president-elect of the organization.
That's an upgrade, I believe.
Well, yeah, I was merely an area director before, so I got 3 more years involved in the organization. So. But I look forward to it because, it's the organization of people who make cosmetics from around the United States and Canada. And actually, we also interact with people from around the world. So the people that make the products mm-hmm. that you use every day are part of this organization, and I am the vice president.
You're in charge of them all, so.
Well, not for another couple of years, but I am directing the learning of these people.
Yeah, well, congratulations. They're in good hands.
Yeah, well, there were some interesting talks there. There was an interesting talk about new anti-aging ingredients, although there were lots of them, but my favorite was a talk by a guy named Carl Lintner, who talked about the way anti-aging products are marketed. And he thought that instead of cosmetic people saying how it's going to affect collagen or affect the way wrinkles look and things, he said that the marketing should start to focus on how a product makes people feel. And specifically, he posed that people should start marketing their products as products that make you more happy.
I'm not sure I understand. So,
right now, most of the marketing sort of borders on drug claims, right? Where they say that it's going to remove wrinkles or stop wrinkles or boost collagen and elastin production. And those actually, in the United States anyway, those would be illegal claims for cosmetic people to make.
Yeah, there's some gray area there, but okay.
Right. All right. But the ultimate goal of cosmetics, according to him, was that you want to use these products that are going to make you happier. And if you use anti-aging products and they make your skin look better, it makes you happier. And he presented some research to that effect, right?
I'm still not sure I understand this. Because all the claims would just sound the same then. Or different, like, some products make you joyous, some make you happy, some make you glad. I'm not sure I'm down with that.
Yeah, you do raise a good point there. It would be a little harder. Of course, now all products sound the same too, right?
Well, it's a fair point. So, well, I'll be anxious to see if the Littner protocol catches on.
Yeah. There was also another talk about preservatives, and one of the things that I found interesting out of that was the reminder that just because something is safe to eat doesn't mean that it's safe for your skin. And so think about an example like cinnamon or peppermint or even limes.
Okay.
These are things that can irritate your skin, right, and not things you want to put on your body. Yeah. So, just because something's okay to eat doesn't mean it should go on your skin.
Have you tried my famous peppermint cinnamon lime casserole, by the way? It's quite delicious.
Yeah, fabulous. You had that over the holidays.
There you go.
Finally, you remember that Myers-Briggs study?
Oh, yeah, personality profiling, sure.
Yeah. I think I was a PENT, P-E-N-T, or E-N-T-P, or something like that.
Yeah, I think. I actually took the Myers-Briggs Stratton test, which is, never mind, it's small engines, advanced. Never mind.
Gotcha. Well, anyway, I always thought that was kind of a BS thing.
Yeah.
But there was a keynote speaker at the talk, And she was neuroscientist Dr. Helen Fisher. She gave an interesting talk, which was kind of a spin on the Myers-Briggs study. Essentially, she collected data from people at Match.com and was able to classify people into four categories based on their dominant brain chemical system, including dopamine, testosterone, estrogen, or serotonin. So you came out to be like a dopamine person, a testosterone person, estrogen and serotonin.
They're asking for blood work now on Match.com? How do they even know this?
No, so this is the interesting part. I mean, it seems sketchy to me, but she was able to make predictions based on predictions of a person's brain chemistry based on responses to questionnaires. So they created this questionnaire. People take the questionnaire, okay. And then she's able to predict which is your dominant brain chemical system.
Really?
Yeah. And so I thought it was kind of like, come on, this sounds sketchy. Yeah. But she showed some research where she had people take the study, and then she did the blood samples and was able to predict which of the questionnaires they filled out based on their blood work.
Interesting.
Yeah, and she had like 14 million data points because they had people from Match.com take this survey.
Yeah, but they didn't have blood work on 14 million people. I mean,
no, not at all. But it was that base of people answering this survey which helped develop the survey and then the predictive tool. I don't know.
Okay.
And anyway, if you want to find more about brain science and how it affects your personality, you can check out their website. Neurocolor.com. We'll have a link in the show notes.
Absolutely.
Hey, we got beauty science stories today, don't we?
Yeah, why don't we just jump right in and get to that? I've actually got one that's a follow-up from a story that you brought up, I think it was two episodes ago. Remember the anti-aging lingerie?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Well, here's another item of cosmetic clothing. There's a UK company that's making moisturizing pajamas.
Wow.
So, yeah, these come to us from this London-based company, Matrix APA is the name, and their line of pajamas is called Hydra Active. By the way, before we get to the science of how things work, I've got the perfect marketing slogan for them.
Oh, yeah, do tell.
Here we go. Hydra Active Moisturizing Pajamas, so every dream is a wet dream. That's golden.
That's pretty good. Depends on your target market, I guess.
maybe
for a men's line.
Anyway, just like the lactic acid-containing lingerie you talked about, these pajamas use a micro-encapsulation technology. Specifically, they contain aloe vera, which they say, quote, lightly moisturizes the skin during sleep. Now, you know, I tend to be a little negative on these things. I see these products as kind of a fad, and I say that for a couple of reasons. So first of all, I really can't think of any technical rationale why these would work very well. And there's basically two ways to moisturize skin. You can,
right.
You know, apply external moisture, which is one of the things a lotion does, or, you know, taking a shower or whatever. That's one way. You know, introduce extra water to the skin, or you occlude the skin and lock in the moisture that's already there.
Right.
And in reality, lotions really do some of both, right? They introduce some moisture and they lock in moisture. So
exactly. If it's well formulated.
Yeah, right. So aloe vera, you know, really doesn't do either of these things very well. I mean, the pajamas certainly aren't going to be sopping wet where they'll introduce external moisture to your skin. So it's not going to work that way. And secondly, you know, it's really hard to deliver any kind of ingredients to the skin from clothing. To do it in a uniform manner, right? And we talked about this with the lingerie, right? You'll get, you know, kind of an overdose on the crease points, like, you know, maybe your elbows or armpits where there's a lot of friction and a lot of contact. Where it's loose on your sides, you'll get less, you know, you'll get underdosed. So you really don't get an even application. You know, at best, it's going to give you some light effect. And then third, you know, no matter how good this encapsulation technology is, it's eventually going to wear out, especially after laundering, and then you're just left with regular expensive pajamas. So I don't know. I think this thing is very much so a gimmick.
I mean, it still seems to me it would be better to just put on a moisturizer than put your pajamas over it, right? Right. I mean, that's going to work better. I guess if you don't remember to put on your moisturizer, I don't see this thing moisturizing your skin based on encapsulated aloe.
Very, very effectively anyway. Now, interestingly, they're specifically targeting the airline industry with this product, which I thought was kind of cool. And apparently this retail travel market is growing, and according to them, the humidity on a plane drops as low as 10 to 20% during flight. And I thought, damn, that's really low. So I checked that number, you know, and it turns out it's true. And do you know why? I'm like, well, why wouldn't you just humidify the air in the cabin? What's the big deal? Well, apparently this is a real problem. It's a bit of a sidebar to the story, but I thought this was interesting. So, you know, the air at that altitude when you're flying, you know, 35,000 feet or whatever, is very dry. So they would have to bring in moisture and basically pump it into the cabin. And if you did that, that moisture would stay in the cabin and it would freeze against the inside of the fuselage at high altitudes. And then when you land, it would melt. And they said it causes this phenomena called rain in the plane. So, I mean, this is apparently a legitimate issue. Now, they do have some special technology where they have a humidifier for the cabin and then a dehumidifier that's close to the fuselage. So basically, you're putting moisture in and pulling it out. But that's used typically just for, like, the pilot's cabin and maybe some first-class cabins because it's expensive and it adds weight to the plane and everything else.
Sure.
But I thought that was interesting. I didn't know that about the dryness of plane air.
I guess if you're a frequent flyer, there could be a line of products just for you, right?
Pajamas, I'm guessing.
Indeed. Well, that's fascinating. We'll see where that cosmetic-infused clothes goes in the future. Are you ready to talk about the trouble at Wen?
Oh, sure.
Sure. Well, here's a recent story that demonstrates one of the problems with developing novel cosmetic products. The Wen Hair Products company is being sued by more than 200 women who claim that Wen Hair Products have led to significant hair loss, bald patches, hair breakage, and even rashes.
Hmm.
While the creators of Wen say that their cleansing conditioner product, which, you know, we'll talk about the ingredient in a moment, but it's just a rinse-out conditioner, they say it's a gentle replacement for shampoo, conditioner, and leave-in conditioner. An attorney in Dallas says different, and this is the person who brought the suit along with 200 other people. This attorney hired a chemist to evaluate the ingredients, and they discovered that there are no cleansers in the product. Yeah, no kidding. They further claim that it is more of a lotion that is blocking the hair follicles, and that's their explanation for the hair loss. So I took a look at the ingredients, and this certainly isn't like a hand lotion first. I don't know what chemist they had look at this, but it's actually a hair conditioner.
Yeah.
I mean, it contains behene trimonium sulfate, methyl sulfate, stearimidopropyl dimethylamine, amodimethicone, acetyl and cetyl alcohols. And then it's filled with a bunch of natural extracts that really aren't doing much of anything.
Yeah, we've talked about the product on the show before, and you're right, it is really just a glorified rinse-out conditioner.
Right. And so there are no obvious ingredients in the formula that would cause significant hair loss. They did include menthol in the product, which I guess that could cause irritation in some people, right? And you know, maybe some of the extracts could cause some weird allergic reaction, but, you know, they're all pretty standard ingredients used in hair care products around the market, right? I really don't see anything that could cause this kind of hair loss, especially if they're rinsing out the product.
Well, and, you know, one of my favorite things to do is, you know, comment on ongoing litigation by other companies. That's always fun to do. So, you know, we really don't know what's going on. But my sense was, when I saw this story, you know, if this really was a problem, every rinse-out conditioner in the world, or, you know, a majority of rinse-out conditioners would be causing the same problem because the base of the formula is so, you know, similar to everything else. Now, you mentioned the rash. Of course, there could be an allergic reaction going on, but that's much different than, you know, your hair falling out in clumps. You know, some of the accounts said it's causing the hair to break. You know, some showed, you know, bald spots the size of an egg. You know, I mean, so who knows what's really going on here, but I know, having been in the industry, you'll get these complaints, and then you'll find out, oh, well, maybe it's because I relaxed my hair 2 days before this, and the hair was more brittle, and so more of it broke off. So there's almost always something else behind the scenes that really, you know, explains what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I doubt there isn't much to this lawsuit, but, you know, if you see the pictures that were shared on Twitter, it looks pretty disconcerting. Yeah. Mm. So it made me wonder, you know, what could be going on? So I thought of a few possibilities, and, you know, any or all of these could be going on or not. But so the number one thing I think that is happening is that people are mistaking correlation with causation. Mm. I mean, assuming that they have hair loss, right? You know, people lose hair for a number of reasons unrelated to whatever product they're using. But it just happens to coincide with whatever they put on at the moment or that they're using, and then they automatically blame that product. You know, that's why we always see people complain that Pantene is making their hair fall out, right? And it could just be, like, natural shedding or whatever, but that's just because... So a second one I thought was the allergic reaction. I mean, this product has a long list of natural extracts and oils, and they're high up on their ingredient list, so maybe they're using a really high level of them, you know. It seemed an extreme result, but, you know, I don't know. Maybe people are putting it on their hair too long or leaving it on or something. I remember when I was working on the Benchmark conditioner, we were testing it in some bottles that said leave-on conditioner. And I was living with my sister at the time, and I brought a bottle home, and it said leave-on conditioner, but it was a rinse-out conditioner. And she was using it as a leave-on conditioner.
And did her hair fall out?
Her hair did not fall out. In fact, she said, I really like that leave-in conditioner. So the number third possibility that I thought is that there's also the possibility that people are just making it up, right? I mean, when someone's dissatisfied, when a dissatisfied Wen user, maybe they heard about this hair loss lawsuit and they're like, you know, I hate that product. I'm going to screw this company and I'll just join in, right? I mean, and I can imagine there's a lot of dissatisfied Wen users because... You know, using the Wen product is not like products you're used to. You know, your hair doesn't feel the way you're used to. And, you know, they might be unhappy they spent like $30 for a product that leaves their hair feeling bad.
Well, especially when you could use, you know, a pretty basic, inexpensive conditioner and get the same effect. So,
Right. So if the further claims in the suit are to be believed, though, Wen didn't do themselves any favors because they according to the lawsuit, they removed negative comments about the product online.
Oh, that's not good.
So it does tend to make it look kind of bad and like they're being manipulative. Although, you know, as website owners, I can really understand the reluctance of people just letting anyone write whatever they want on your website, you know? I mean, there's free speech, right? But then... You know, it's also your website is kind of like your house, and you wouldn't let somebody come into your house and insult you, right? So think about it. But this is why I always think if you're looking for reviews of a product, you know, don't go to the company website,
that's fair advice.
To look for independent stuff. So anyway, this lawsuit has gotten Wen some bad publicity, but I doubt they'll be paying out unless they want to like settle the lawsuit because I can't for the life of me look at the ingredients and say, this would cause problems.
Well, still, it's worth a shot. If you want to, after the show, I could shave a couple of patches in your hair and we could send in pictures and see if we can get on the gravy train. I don't know.
Well, you know, according to this one kid at tutoring last month, he's like, hey, you want to know something? And I'm like, what? And he goes, you got a bald spot.
Nice. Thanks, kid. Good luck on your ACTs. Oh, all right. Hey, you know, a lot of times... You're talking about getting heat for negative comments, but you know we get heat for critiquing products that we don't actually use. That's happened a couple of times. So I'm going to go out on a limb with this one. So Perry, you know, watch my back. But remember, a few shows ago we talked about that spray-on nail polish.
Yeah, sure.
And how it's like, oh, it sounds like a simple solution. You know, a quick way to apply polish, right? And it turned out, it really wasn't so simple or quick. Well, I found another product that seems to be an overly complicated solution to a problem. Now, I don't personally wear eyeliner. I will state that emphatically.
Not anymore.
But there's this new product from Dior. It's eyeliner patches. So picture this. So instead of, you know, taking out your eyeliner and just, you know, sort of carefully applying the look you want... Now you can just pop open a little box of stickers in the color that you choose and just apply it to your eyelid and you're done. I was like, wow, this sounds like another one of those products. It's too good to be true. It's like, oh, I don't have to worry about painting the line on straight or poking myself in the eye with the applicator wand or taking too much time to do it, right? I just put a sticker on and go.
you just stick it on, like, yeah. Just stick it on.
Yeah, that's the pitch, but it seems to me like it's yet another gimmick that will fade away, and I say that for four reasons. Number one, there are limited color choices. You can buy eyeliners in a zillion colors, right? Well, these patches only come in a few colors, so...
Well, at when you start, though, you'd have to only do a few colors.
But still, I doubt you would ever get the same palette of colors as you would have in conventional products. So I think that's a negative right there. So you got to make some compromises in your color choice. Second is the cost. You know, eyeliners, you know, I don't know, $5-$10, up $20 maybe. This thing is $60
wow.
for a little box of stickers. So that just seems outrageous. Thirdly, you know, even the best eyeliner is prone to creasing, you know, as you open and close your eyes a little bit over the course of the day, but at least that type of product, you know, because it consists of oils and powder and pigments, will sort of, you know, fill in the creases in your eye. It sort of will contour to your eye to some extent.
Essentially, it's self-healing.
Right. But a sticker, as that sort of shifts around as you move your eye during the day, that's not going to continue to contour as well. You know, it's going to wrinkle. It's going to become dislodged.
Wait, I guess I misunderstood. So the sticker stays on your face?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's not going to feel comfortable, is it?
That's another reason. And then fourth is just the problem of the, you know, the sticky stuff that's going to be on the back of the sticker. You know, adhesives are, first of all, they're notoriously difficult to stick to skin. You know, unless you're talking about something with the adhesive strength of a Band-Aid.
Right.
I don't think anybody wants that on their eyelid. So, you know, these things just aren't going to stay that well over the course of the day. And besides, you know, adhesives are potentially one of the most irritating ingredients because of the potential monomers left over in the polymer mix if they're using an acrylate adhesive. So adhesives just tend to be irritating in general. So... I know, the bottom line is I'm calling gimmick on this, and I would expect it to be around about as long as the spray-on nail polish.
Here, the beauty brains dashing the hopes of entrepreneurs everywhere. If it's innovative, bring to us and we'll knock it down.
It occurs to me we're going to have to be more careful with this in the future, because now that you're, grand czar of the Secret Society of Cosmetic Chemists, maybe the person who created this product belongs to this organization and... maybe we shouldn't talk like this. I don't know.
The views of my views are not reflective of those of the organization. You have to sign that when you get elected.
Nice.
Should we do some iTunes reviews as a little breather here?
Oh yeah. We get a question in this month's or one of this month's reviews, which we can talk about. So we got a couple of these. I'll read the first one, I guess.
All right.
Rabican Wren says, I love the discussions on the podcasts, and I also like that it's written out and reviewed on their website, thebeautybrains.com. I think we forget to tell people sometimes that you can go to thebeautybrains.com and read a transcript, loosely transcripted, of everything we talk about on the show. So.
Yeah, that's a great job of that. And that, actually, a lot of people find us through Google because of the transcripts on our website. Yeah. Here's another one. This one comes to us from Mar Red from Canada. They say, if you're interested in products, ingredients, this is the podcast for you. I trust these guys because they're talking about formulas and efficacy from a scientific perspective, and they aren't trying to sell me products. In fact, their separation from the marketing/PR world is refreshing. You need to listen to these podcasts.
That's the kind of endorsement we're looking for. And that's what we like about these iTunes reviews. It helps people find out about us. It helps sponsors, you know, find out about the show. So we do appreciate you guys taking time.
And it helps us know whether people are finding what we're saying interesting.
Yeah, the feedback is helpful. And to that point, let me read the final one. This one comes from Nazzy06, who says, great content. They source their information well. Just wish they would talk about the products and the science a bit longer rather than their fake beauty product / how to pronounce different product games. Oops.
<What? laughs>
Not everybody's a fan of the games.
Well, you know, at least she didn't point out the inane chit-chat at the beginning.
God, if we give that up, we have nothing left. But Nazzy also makes another interesting point, and this is one of the reasons I wanted to read this one. But Nazzy says, what they're missing is a statement that they don't accept money, gifts, etc. from any beauty companies. I'm new to the podcast, so I may have missed it, but I want to know that there's no conflict of interest or power of influence. So Nazzy, rest assured, we receive no money doing this other than, you know, if you click on the ads on our site, if you follow the Audible link. I mean, those things are obviously, obviously can benefit us. You'll occasionally see an Amazon link on our site, but we don't write about something because somebody gives us money to say something about it. That never happens. And if we do ever receive a free sample that we happen to write about, we'll just claim that in the post or on the podcast. We would tell you that right up front.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And if you've listened to the show, you know, we generally don't give glowing reviews about anything. So if we're like pitchmen for products, we're terrible.
It's a good way to put it. Nobody's buying the spray and nail polish based on our review, that's for sure.
And now they certainly aren't going to go for that sticky thing on your eyeballs. All right. Should we get back to the beauty science?
Yeah, you were going to talk about some kind of cool packaging, weren't you?
Yeah, okay. So here's a pretty cool new packaging line of skincare products. It's a light flesh-colored package that turns pink when you touch it. It was designed by Stas Neritin, who is a Russian package designer and is using a brand called Naked.
Hmm.
So the way the package works is it's covered with this thermochromatic paint. So, and when you touch it with your warm hands, the paint reacts and it changes color. So it goes from this flesh color to sort of this redder color, which is interesting and novel. But, you know, it reminds me of that liquid crystal technology.
Oh, totally.
Who was that from? Was that a Hallstar?
Hallcrest.
Hallcrest, yeah. Right. But the sales guy would have their business card. Yep. The business card would be black. And then, but when you took it in your hand, it changed color.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's the same technology the mood rings from the 1970s used.
Right. It's a pretty cool technology. But, you know, I'm pretty certain, though, that I had this same idea 15 years ago.
What?
Yeah. I think I even presented it at one of those innovation breakfasts.
You're saying the idea of color-changing packaging?
Exactly. Yeah. Remember the innovation breakfast?
Yeah, right. We'd present ideas to management, and they'd vote on them, and...
Right. Actually, Randy's being modest, but he, every time we'd have an innovation breakfast, he would present an idea and would always win.
Well,
you know, I also frequently won too. I think together we
won the majority of those.
Yeah, but this was an idea I had, and you know, but that just goes to show you, ideas really aren't worth anything unless you do something about them, and we did nothing about that idea.
What I thought was cool, there are two cool things about this packaging. One was the color changing aspect, but the second thing is the texture and shape of this stuff is just weird. And to be honest, it was a little disturbing. Like, they showed one example package that, you know, that they pictured in the article, and it did look sort of organic and flesh-like. It almost looked like something that would get an erection. I don't know. Yeah. It was just very disturbing.
It reminded me of, like, Silly Putty, but also if you go to, like, an art museum and you get these just weird globs, which they kind of look like a person posing, but you're not really sure.
Right.
Hey, very cool, and there's some cool things you can do with packaging. I don't know how the products are.
Yeah. Well, that's not really the point, I guess.
So we'll see if this kind of thing ever catches on. I mean, it's cool, but I imagine the novelty might wear off pretty quickly, especially if it's hard to get out of the bottle.
Yeah, well, and it's got to be expensive, too. So.
Yeah, there is that.
All right. Well, we got time for one more story, and I did tease that we were going to talk about caffeinated toothpaste.
Oh, yes.
I just don't get this fascination with putting caffeine in cosmetics. There's even a caffeinated shave cream on the market.
Really?
And a couple of years ago, we wrote about caffeinated soap. You know, we showed that you'd have to stay in the shower about 2 hours to absorb enough caffeine through your skin to get a buzz. But there's a new contender now, and it's caffeinated toothpaste. It's called Power Toothpaste, and it's said to be the world's first caffeinated oral care product.
To help wake you up or something?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'll put the link in the show notes. You can read all about it. But one of my favorite parts of the article was where Dan Maripol, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, he's the founder of the company, I guess, he says, and I quote, "At Power Toothpaste, we believe a big part of the problem is that oral care hasn't been exciting enough. And the products that Big Toothpaste is offering just aren't good enough." I love that he used the phrase Big Toothpaste. It's another one to add to our list. So
sure.
Dan says, you know, regular products are boring, but Power Toothpaste will change all that. With Power Toothpaste, you get a rush while you brush.
Clever.
It's very clever. So it's clever, but is it true? So can you really get a caffeine buzz from brushing your teeth? And to find out, I'm afraid we're going to have to do some math.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I know how we love to talk math on the show.
Well, we'll play this a little fast and loose, but get it close enough so you get the idea. So here we go. So first of all, you know, an 8-ounce cup of coffee has, you know, about 100 milligrams of caffeine. I don't know anybody who drinks just 8 ounces, so your typical caffeine jolt's probably in the range of, you know, 150 to 200 milligrams when you ingest it.
Sure.
Now, we also know that when you brush your teeth, you use, you know, about a pea-sized amount. It's maybe a 20th of an ounce, which is, you know, gram and a half. Let's just call it 2 grams, all right?
Sure.
So therefore, to get toothpaste that would have a, you know, kind of a coffee level of caffeine, you'd need about a 10% concentration of caffeine in the toothpaste. Now, you know, some of this will be absorbed. That is a lot. But maybe it's not quite that much because, you know, it's going to be absorbed through your oral mucosa as well as, sure. you know, as opposed to your digestive tract. So when it goes through your stomach, the caffeine gets degraded by stomach acid. So you need a higher concentration if you're swallowing it. So maybe, you know, let's say even 5%, you know, may do it. But even that much is going to give the toothpaste a very bitter flavor. That's kind of a side issue here. I know we talked to the people who worked on caffeinated gum for one of the big gum companies, and they had a heck of a time covering the taste of the caffeine. Mm-hmm. It was really quite a challenge. So anyway, I would expect the toothpaste to maybe have some taste issues, but that's not really the issue here. I think the real hurdle is the exposure time, right? How much of that caffeine will be absorbed into your blood while you brush your teeth? Now, we're supposed to brush your teeth for 2 minutes. That's what's recommended by the American Dental Association. Now, I don't know how many people adhere to that. I know I brush my teeth for about 8 seconds.
Well, you know, a lot of people have the electric toothbrush, and it has a timer on it, and it goes. But
that's cool.
So maybe those people could, but yeah, who is going to stand there for 2 minutes and brush your teeth?
So, but let's just assume you're brushing long enough. Is that enough time for caffeine to be absorbed through the lining of your mouth, which is, you know, we're talking about oral transmucosal drug delivery, essentially. So I had to do some digging to get to that answer. And by the way, just in case you think this job is glamorous, here's one of the articles that I had to read during doing the research to answer this question. Here's the title of the article: Pharmacokinetics of Caffeine of Oral Coffee Consumption versus a Single Administration by Coffee Enema.
Wow.
At least we don't have to do that study. We only have to read about it. Anyway, I found a paper on caffeinated gum that talks about the caffeine being released into saliva and then being absorbed through the tissues in your mouth. And it says it takes about 3 to 5 minutes for the caffeine to be absorbed and to reach your brain through your mouth. That's pretty quick.
Yeah,
and
that's quick.
Do you know how long it takes when you drink caffeine?
I imagine less than a minute.
No. When you drink it, it takes about 30, up to 30 minutes.
Really?
Yeah, it takes a while. Okay. Yeah. By the way, I'll put a link to that show notes in the paper in case anybody wants to drink about it, to read about it. But the bottom line here is this isn't quite as crazy as it sounds. So if this toothpaste contains, you know, 5%-ish of caffeine, and if you brush for, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, yeah, that's a long time. But yeah, it looks like you might be able to get a caffeine buzz from your toothpaste. It's certainly going to work better than the caffeinated soap or the shaving cream.
Well, it would be interesting to see, like, you could do a simple blood test, right? Before, then you brush your teeth, and after, and check it out. I wonder if in their marketing of this, they'll do that.
I think they're just going to ask people on Match.com.
That could work, too. Well, that's fascinating technology. I'm glad to see caffeine hasn't left the beauty industry yet.
All right. Well, Perry, that brings us to the end of another highly caffeinated program.
Well, there is one thing that we should finish up with.
Yeah, what's that?
You know, last year I read 54 books.
Congratulations, I guess.
Which was 10 more than my goal of 44. And, you know, but actually the only way I was able to do that was instead of reading them, I actually just listened to them.
Ah, the audiobook.
Yeah, I mean, the last one I remember reading was a collection of poetry by Charles Bukowski. And, you know, that guy's a real hoot. I encourage everyone to check him out. Ooh. It also makes me think that maybe this year we should add a poetry section to the beauty brand. What do you think, huh?
Maybe if you ask me next time, I will read you my favorite poem.
Oh, yes, I'll remember to. Anyway, if reading a lot of books is this year is a goal that you've set, there's no better way to accomplish this than by getting audiobooks. And we've teamed up with Audible.com to get you started. If you sign up through our link, audibletrial.com/beautybrains, you can download a free audiobook and support the show. You can get the book by Charles Bukowski or our own book, The Beauty Aisle Insider, or pretty much any other book that you want. And the best thing is that your first audiobook is free. Oh. So just sign up through our link, audibletrial.com/beautybrains, for a 30-day trial, which you can cancel at any time, and you still get to keep that free book. So go to audibletrial.com/beautybrains right now.
Excellent. And of course, we'll put that link in the show notes.
All right, so that brings us to the end of the show then, huh?
Yes, so all beauty science, all episode long. Everybody's going to love that. And we'll be back with more of the same next week. But until then, remember, be brainy about your beauty.
I'm mooning all the morning, morning all the night, and in between it's nicotine. Not much heart to fight. Black coffee.